The following is a presentation that was given on May 11th, 2019 in Hood River, Oregon. This is for the Master Brewers Association of America. They asked us to come speak to their organization and conference to talk about continuous improvement and some of the resources available to them. The theme of their kind of a half day Friday and a full day or a half day Saturday as well. And we were in the Saturday morning session. And the topic was the whole conference is geared around process improvement. And then we were kind of following up and talking about lean concepts, lean culture, and how everything connects together with engagement around their employees and things that they can do and books they can read and resources they can go to to get more information and more help. So most of the organizations there were breweries and people in the beer industry primarily. So the presenters starts off with Maria Grzanka, and then Matt Horvat, and then myself, Brian Hurley. Hope you enjoy.
Last talk on continuous improvement. I asked PDX Lean, they're a nonprofit organization that really is about helping companies implement and understand continuous improvement. They're also tied with a lot of Portland State University, so we actually have three speakers, which is really cool because they all have some different perspective to add and different parts. So I will go ahead and got some bios here. So Brian Hurley, you want to raise your hand, Brian? So that's Brian. He's a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt Business Performance Improvement in Portland, Oregon. He teaches Lean and Six Sigma classes, facilitates workshops and events, performs statistical analysis, and mentors employees through improvement efforts. He is the author of Lean Six Sigma for Good, How Improvement Experts Can Help People in Need and Help Improve the Environment. Next up, Maria
Grzanka.
I was close. As a continuous improvement instructor, facilitator, and coach with 20 years experience in continuous improvement, Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, and a background in supply chain management. She currently serves as process improvement instructor at Portland State University's Center for Executive and Professional Education and as an independent consultant for various organizations. Matt, at the end there, is founder of Lean Portland, a pro bono management consultancy, and is an internal improvement coach engineer at Vancouver Clinic, a lifelong learner of customer-focused production systems design in both projects and operations. His message is about the attitude of respect and the responsibility to have for one another, as well as the discipline of applying scientific thinking to everyday concerns, which I think has been a lot of our focus since yesterday. So, please welcome these three to talk more about this group.
Good morning. The enzymes, I didn't understand much about that, but what I do see is that you're all here to talk about enzymes on a Saturday morning, so I can see that you're very invested in the brewing process, and likewise, we're all people that are very invested in getting together and talking about continuous improvement. So by formal training, we are an industrial engineer, statistician, and supply chain manager. And collectively, we come together as a group, in a group called Lean Portland, that's basically a professional and social networking organization. Matt founded Lean Portland in, I think, 2004, somewhere around there, as a way to meet people in the Portland area that were doing work in continuous improvement. And since that time, the group has evolved, and we have a real mission now of helping people make work better. The people that make up the group some of them have full-time jobs in continuous improvement roles inside companies. Some of us are independent consultants. Some are looking for work in continuous improvement. Some people just want to learn about lean and continuous improvement. Is that okay? No. Okay, so that's what we do. Primarily, we do this through monthly networking and educational events. So we teach and host workshops on the basics of continuous improvement, Lean, Six Sigma, and we also do volunteer consulting for local nonprofit organizations. We're not actually a nonprofit ourselves. All of our educational events are either free or donation-based, but if somebody by way of Lean Portland gets some kind of consulting work, those consultants donate a fee of their, the fees that they get from consulting back to Lean Portland, and that's how we fund and keep these events going. So hopefully someday we get to do an event like this one. It's a 6-minute video show of the Toyota has a foundation arm, and this is some of the work they did with the New York City Food Bank after Hurricane Sandy. So that video, the three of us use a lot. It's, I think, a good overview of some of the Lean principles used in continuous improvement. One concept they flashed up there really fast was Muda. That means waste. Matt and Brian is going to talk a little bit more about that. There were two really obvious improvements in that video where they reduced the box size, and that got them to be able to put a lot more boxes of food on the truck, help feed more families. The other one was improving the flow of their packaging operation. When you're talking about brewing, that might not have a lot of moving parts because the tanks are pretty much where they are. But there is a lot of improving the flow in changeover. Some of this does come from Toyota, where they're doing changeover on big machines that are changing out dies. So there's a lot of Lean theory around quick changeovers and the flow and time used there. Some of the things that are not so obvious in this video are clearly they had a really big improvement to start, and that happens usually when we start to see all these different types of waste and we can start to address the low-hanging fruit. You can see a really big improvement really quickly, but then what starts to happen is, you know, if you're lucky, that stabilizes because we have a good standard process in the organization. But if that, the way of standardizing our processes isn't quite baked into the operation, some of those improvements can start to backslide. Now, if you have a good quality department, continuous improvement people that are helping you, they might be there to help you keep your improvements going in this direction, but it's never quite as big as it was in the beginning, which can be disappointing, and then people kind of give up. So over time, what I think the focus of many continuous improvement people is, you know, how do you manage this area here after you make the first large improvement? And that comes a lot through coaching, through teaching, critical thinking to people that are actually doing the work, and creating the right culture. Sorry for my terrible sideways handwriting. And creating the right culture where continuous improvement is happening by everyone, not just a few experts that are coming in to help with these large improvements. So that is what we're working on in Lean Portland with nonprofits. For example, this was some pictures from Free Geek in Portland. They're an electronics recycler. This is the before picture, and this is the area where they are rebuilding cell phones to sell back to the community, use cell phones to sell back in the community. Before, they had boxes of mixture of all different types of phones under the desk. No one could really see how many of which type they had. And then afterwards, they were all organized by type. And these are still needing to be rebuilt, but now the sales guy from their store that they also have on site can come in and say, actually, I need 5 iPhone 5s, 2 6Ss, and a couple of Samsungs today to fill the customer demand. So by making that visible, they're able to make that part of the process and repair only what's needed instead of digging through a box and repairing everything.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Maria. And I'll tell a little story about Rebuilding Center. Who is familiar with Rebuilding Center in Portland? I love that place. Right, it's like a Goodwill What you're looking at here on the left-hand side is their new receiving processing area, and on the right-hand side is the sales floor. You can kind of see some color coding here. And so even if you don't know Rebuilding Center, you imagine what it's like when you're trying to clear out your garage and you've got a bunch of junk that you want to get rid of. These guys generally take it, and that stuff, if you're like me, shows up as a mess. It's like, throw it in the back of the truck, take it to them. It's like, thank goodness it's gone. And so they end up with these donation carts full of all of our leftover refuse that got some value to it, but it's a giant mess. And you'd end up with like 25 carts in the hallways full of stuff. And the whole place is, there's some full-time staff, but it's mostly volunteer-run. So it's just really difficult environment to work in, a lot of safety issues. The customers who are frequent flyers, they knew how to work. I mean, you'd show up when there was donations, and then you'd get the best stuff, and then you'd run out the door with it. But it wasn't very conducive to actually moving all the product. And then they also had a lot of like day volunteers coming out of maybe required community service, who really couldn't function in the environment either. They couldn't really help out and support. So to try to get out of the craziness, they spent a lot of time figuring out ways they could make these day volunteers show up and be productive. They did color coding across all of the different material types so that when a cart came full from the donations area, you could just kind of pick and place where stuff goes and get that product right to the sales floor, and it takes like almost no time to do training. So this is a long way removed from I know what you guys all do, but it's a neat example about how efficiency applies in the way that's custom to the organization that they're working in. This color coding and this kind of efficiency, there are applications like that in your industry. I know very little about it, but there's a lot of safety requirements, I'm sure, and there's like places where people should and should not go unless you're trained. And that's what to look for here and see how they've applied these ideas to their work environment that's very specific to their work environment. And so I wonder, in your environment, where is this kind of attention to detail really necessary? It's going to look different, of course, but the idea of having respect for the workforce, it still applies completely. So with that in mind, I want to share just some of the random benefits you can get from doing process improvement. What I heard from this morning, and from what little again I know about your industry, is that you guys are very focused on product quality, and I would guess the efficiency of building what you build, brewing the beer. But with a little bit of group and facilitation techniques and training, you can do really well with employee engagement. So it really depends on where you're at in the culture of your organization on when to apply these different techniques. Of course, there's process improvements that just helps you get more work out the door. If you've got facility constraints issues, there's a lot of different techniques you can use to just relocate and look at your production system design so you can do a higher productivity with the same square footage. In the healthcare facilities industry where I come from, we're able to actually save a lot of money just by doing lower levels of capital investment by changing our processes. In fact, sometimes if you do go to the doctor's office, you might see smaller and smaller waiting rooms now being built because we're trying to not make there be waiting before you go see the doctor. And that lets us build a smaller building and repurpose that capital for different reasons. So less inventory, less wasted time. These are probably ideas that are pretty straightforward. You don't want to buy too early. You don't want to buy too much. Errors and mistakes. Visibility into problems. That's a huge place that we invest our time in helping people understand the applications of visual management. A lot of it has to do with just who does the job and what they know how to do, flexible workers to handle demands. So a great way to get started is to teach everybody about waste. So we got a very specific definition about waste. We think about the work that we do for our customers as our value-adding work. So that's probably all of the stuff that we heard about this morning, all of the actual processing of your product, your raw materials, transforming to the end use from the customer, that would be your value-adding steps. Non-value-adding steps is everything else you do. So it's a nice way to just kind of categorize and take a look at them, and this just helps start the conversation. so that your team can talk with you about where they're seeing opportunities for improvement. So I recommend you get a poster of this, put it on your wall, and tell your team, hey, help me out and find out ways that we can reduce transportation. Like, if there's a way we can stage our incoming raw materials to be closer to the point of use. It's not complicated stuff. This is a real first run with people on how to get engaged in process improvement. And so, and it's just like a team sport. This isn't really for the boss to like go do problem solving. This is to teach everybody about what it means to have like within workstation movement. That's all non-value added stuff. If we can, you know, it's silly, but if you can move your materials from there to here so it's faster, do it. And so you gotta create this culture with your staff to understand that, and you gotta reinforce it and help them. Even make it, it sounds silly, but gamify this stuff and give them little incentives, little recognitions for taking waste out of their process. Inventory is typical. So inventory is a giant waste, mostly because you gotta deal with it. Not only is it on your balance sheet, you can't use that money in other places, but once you have it, now you've got to move it. It expires, you've got to throw it away. Waiting has to do with times within the process where the product is waiting for the next step in line. And so if you've got these giant inventories of work in process, that's generally an opportunity. Overprocessing is doing too good of a job. So I'd actually do a little homebrew, and I was buying a carboy this last year, getting into it. And they said the plastic carboys work just as well as the glass carboys. And so I actually bought the glass because I don't know why, but that's an example of over-processing, right? So it's doing too high of a quality than what your customer needs. All right, does anybody know if that's true, though? Glass and plastic work the same? They don't. All right. No, it's anti-chicks. Overproduction. They say overproduction is the great waste because if you're doing overproduction, then you have to deal with these other wastes. It creates inventory, you have to move it around, it creates transportation waste. Defects, I'm sure that's what you guys are most familiar with. If you throw out a batch of beer, that's obviously a defect. And then skills, not using workers to their fullest abilities. And that's like the cultural side of lean that really makes the difference. And so here's how you can test this in your own environment. Actually, go find somebody in the room you don't know. Ask them about the communication in their company. Do they feel like their opinion's valued? Do they feel safe to talk about problems? And the one answer I got this morning over breakfast was, it varies. And so we as, you know, I'm seeing a predominantly masculine group here, we have to take special care to make sure we're getting the voices from all the people and that it's okay to talk. That's a lot of what this has to do with skills. So there's one more thing I heard about this morning, and this is going to create an awkward 5 minutes, but I think we got the time. You guys are in a pretty labor-intensive work environment, right? I understand that this job is like very involved physically. Who does a stretch and flex at the beginning of every shift? Two, three, any more? Do you guys know what a stretch and flex is? Yes, we're going to do it. So if I could invite you to please stand up. This is just going to take a few minutes. This is what you can do at the beginning of every safety. So climb that ladder, folks. Climb that ladder. Let's get moving. Feeling warmed up? All right, we're going to start from the top down with some shoulder rolls. Switch it around. Backwards. Feeling good? Alright, you're going to be the leaders of this tomorrow morning. Just open up your arms left and then right. And so it's real easy when you're thinking about how to run one of these. You just go from the top down. So we're going to work on our back next. We're just going to do a cat and a cow, so kind of stretch it out. The idea is you can do this with like a all your construction equipment on, because it came out of the construction environment, so it's, you know, you don't have to, well, I guess it's pretty casual. So let's see, we're going to do a little bit of a spread your legs, and we're going to squat a little bit and get our legs kind of warmed up. And then my favorite, the hamstring stretch, feet parallel, one forward, lift up your front toe, and just just kind of gently lean forward. For the men in the room with tight hamstrings, this feels real nice. And you can rotate your legs. You can maybe get a calf stretch there too. All right. Well, that's the stretch and flex.
How many of you have seen that these weights before? Some of you? Okay. So one thing I thought that was really cool was that these also line up with sustainability efforts and environmental impacts as well. So if you have inventory, you need space. That means you need a bigger building. And if you're building something new or expanding, that's going to require materials. And then you gotta heat, maybe cool, and light the space. And that's gonna cost money and have an environmental impact as well. So by cutting down the inventory and letting things move through your facility faster, that will require less actual space. Or you can, like we were talking about, can we modify the process to reduce the time or delay expanding or having to move to a new facility by looking at the route and the flow of your work? Another thing is transportation. If you're having to move and transport things around a lot, may require packaging and materials and plastics and wraps and cardboard boxes and containers and all those things that have a material impact. It requires someone's got to make those. And there's raw materials that are consumed and used up for that. And you have defects. Obviously, you have to deal with the defects and dispose of it, get rid of it. And that can have a cost to it as well. Or it can be sent down the drain and have to be processed and treated. So there may be chemicals involved to have to deal with it. And so when we're waiting, things can expire and things can go bad and you can have to throw things out because you ordered too early. So one of the common things we run across is bulk buying and saying, well, I can get a really good deal if I buy a lot of this up front. But then if I don't have processes that deal with it quickly, it has the risk of going bad. And so when we look back, we took up a lot of space to store all this that we got a good deal on, but did we actually get the money's worth at the end of the day or not? When we had to deal with the loss that we had and the extra cost of carrying that around and the money that wasn't in our bank account that was tied up in that inventory. So those are some of the questions we will ask a lot. We were just dealing with, I went to Restore yesterday and they have clothing that they're selling now, so just like Goodwill does. And so that was a big area of their whole warehouse taken up on clothing. We're trying to help them figure out how to process those faster so it doesn't take up so much space because they have lots of things coming from the door and they're kind of getting overwhelmed in a good way. But so usually inventory is the first thing we'll look for when we're looking for opportunities. But these all have a tie back to environmental impacts as well. So we're gonna do a little exercise here in our table. We already did a stretching, so we're good there. But we're just gonna have a little discussion now. So when I raise my hand like this, and you see me raise my hand, or Maria or Matt, then also stop talking and raise your hand as well. And that's how I can try to control a large group here. So what I'd like you to do is pick a partner, someone next to you, either two group of two or three people, to keep it really small. And I want you to go back to this list that we showed and talk about where do you see opportunities for these wastes in your work? Okay, and it could be in an office setting too. It doesn't have to be physical material movement of material. It could be paperwork you deal with. It could be files that you have on a computer. It could be other things that you're dealing with suppliers or customers. So think about these wastes. Turn to a partner or a group of three people and we'll take a couple minutes and just talk about what are those wastes in your work. I want to make sure it ties back to the work you're doing. Awesome. Thank you. Great. Awesome. Good discussions. What were some of the they want to share what they talked about? Maybe not? Some people in the room? Great. Awesome.
Yeah, our hop cooler is really far away from our brew house. So a lot of trips for the cellar person, for dry hops, for the brewer, for any other hop gatties. I mean, that's a nice 30-meter walk twice. So.
Now, walking. sucking his time, and it's not adding any value to the end product, right? Who else? Any other things they want to share? Maybe some common things? Stacking and restacking it? That was one? Okay.
Yes.
Good.
There we go.
Any others?
We have a production facility and a brew pub.
We have a production facility and a brew pub, and we just talked about efficient scheduling of beers where 30 barrels, if we're going to make more than 3 batches on our 10-barrel system, why don't we just schedule 1 batch on our production facility so not to tie up time, labor, space, and all that. So kind of looking down the road at where you're going with specialty beers maybe, and you know, how to best fit your brewing facilities, I guess, is an important thing for us.
Good. So did that? Do these concepts make sense? At least some of the ideas to think about and look for. And this takes time to practice, so you're not going to go in there and say, "Oh yeah, here's all the ways I see in my process." One of the recommendations we'll give people is say, just sit back and stand there and just watch. It'll be a little awkward. People are like, "What are you doing? Why are you watching me?" But you have to get to a point where people are comfortable with people watching the work being done and know that it's not to yell at you or catch you doing something wrong. It's, I'm just looking at the process flow and trying to understand what's going on. And after a while, people get comfortable with that. And then it takes a little while. Then all of a sudden, you'll start noticing these patterns showing up and these inefficiencies. Like, why do they keep going back and forth like this? And why is there all this extra motion and activity happening? Sometimes you just got to take that extra time to just sit back and watch. And that's when all of a sudden you'll start to notice those things. And so usually that's how we start off, is we just say, can we just sit here and spend time looking at the process to get an idea of what's really going on here? We can't just walk in and just pick those things out right away. So these things take time. You just carve out a little time to just sit and look and watch. So a couple other points. When we bring up the term lean, often people equate that to number of people I have. They said, oh, we're already lean. We only have 7 people in our group. That doesn't really equate to whether the processes are running efficiently and effectively or not. So you could be very inefficient with 7 people, and you could be very efficient with 5 or with 50 people. So that does not really translate to how things are being done. And sometimes the word lean isn't really the best term because it makes it feel like we're trimmed down or we're really short-staffed and everyone's working more than their share of their job, you know? So that's not what we're talking about. We're trying to figure out, can we make the process simpler so you can work smarter and not feel overwhelmed and burdened by the process? Another thing we'll recommend people is before you go into a big improvement effort is to say, there will be no layoffs due to improvements. Because if people equate that if I make my job more efficient and I'm not needed anymore and my job can go away, and I'm going to be laid off or let go, how many people are going to sign up to help with that? Nobody, especially after the first time it happens. So through other means, we try to figure out how to redeploy resources. This is where you can train people, get them exposure and opportunity somewhere else, give them other skills, get backups built up in your work, have somebody document the processes, make pictures, visuals, those types of things. The freed up time can be used to make improvements to the process. Also, building a culture that brings up problems and makes it safe to bring up problems. And some people think, oh yeah, we're good at bringing up problems, but you might want to verify that with others in your staff and on your team to say, is that really true? Do people feel safe bringing up problems? Or do they feel like they're going to get penalized or yelled at or blamed or possibly fired for making mistakes? We focus on the process is broken, and we assume people are here to do a good job. So going into it with that mindset is really important. I also want to get everybody involved in improvement. This isn't, you know, as our role is working in process improvement, it's not our job to go in and make the improvements. You will not get very far. It's to help everybody make improvements. And everyone's got good ideas. And also think about, this has got to be something that the team succeeds at. It's not making one group or one individual excellent at the expense of other people in the organization. So we're trying to optimize the system, not a one group's success or one person's efficiency or one area's efficiency. Because that's not going to help the overall process flow from the very beginning of raw materials all the way through selling your product. And so we want to make that streamlined. And that might mean that I have to take on more work because it saves someone downstream hours of work. And so I might actually take more time in my process, but that's the right thing for the whole system. And so we want to be system thinkers and not be narrow and saying, well, I did my part and I got my metrics to look better, but everyone else has suffered. That's not what we're talking about with lean. We also want to solve our problems at the workplace where it's happening, not in a meeting or somewhere else. So when you have a problem, instead, let's go look at it. Show me what you're talking about. Let me see it firsthand. So you always want to be looking at problems as they're happening, where they're happening. And then if you are someone in your organization who gets asked a lot of questions or having to go in and solve a lot of problems, how do you delegate that out and start to teach that to other people? Teach them your mindset. Teach them what you've learned. And so that can offload you from having to be a focal point for all those decisions. So instead of giving the answers, ask better questions. Why are you thinking about it that way? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? What impact will that have downstream? What impact will it have to the other department? And you start getting people to think about the way you want them to think to be able to solve those problems. And that's what frees up the management and the experts in your group to be able to do some of the process improvement work, is by getting others to be able to learn how to solve their own problems. And if you're always giving the answers, you're going to just get bombarded with questions over and over again. So moving it out of solving it for people, but teaching them how to solve their own problems. So a couple things you can do as the next steps. We showed you how to briefly, we talked about the A-waste. I think we've got audio for this presentation, so you could share that with your teams. We have the slides available. You can show that graphic. And you can just have that same discussion we had for like 5 minutes. What are some of the opportunities you see? Where could we save some time? Where could we save some effort? Where are we over-processing and doing above and beyond what's really needed? And just get people talking about these types of things. And from there, you'll come up with some really good, simple solutions, probably. Next is get people thinking about ways they can improve their process and set the bar really low. Like, this is a concept that we'll reference later. It's 2 seconds. Can you save 2 seconds out of your day every day? And almost everybody, no one's going to argue and say, I can't find a way to save 2 seconds. So it's a low bar that everyone can accomplish. And usually what happens is they'll save 5 minutes and 10 minutes and 15 minutes of time. But you're setting the bar that every person in your organization can make an improvement. And every day is not, well, I'll do that this month and then I'll do something next month. It's every day looking to say, I brought this closer. If I fill out this part of the form, why are we doing this form in the first place? Where is this information going? Just asking those questions can be powerful. And then also talked about just don't solve the problem directly, but help teach people to experiment, try things out. That's a good idea. Try it out. If it doesn't work, we can go back to the other way we had it. So it's not about trying to come up with a perfect solution, but allowing people to fail and allowing them safety to be able to do that. They're not going to get in trouble. But you're investing in them long-term. It says if they do this enough times, they'll start to realize how to do this right over time. But they have to feel okay to fail sometimes. And sometimes you'll experiment with something and it won't work. And if people are just feel like, it's okay, I'm not going to get in trouble, then it allows people to try new things. And then after the conference, just take some of these ideas and research and dig into them a little bit. We've got some resources for you here in the next couple slides. But you know, look up examples and do Google searches on some of these topics and say, how does this apply to me? Has someone else done some things like this that I can get some ideas from? So So a couple educational opportunities in the Portland area. Our group has workshops. We do free workshops around lean and collaborative culture, Six Sigma, and behavior change. So if you're in the area, you can check it out at our website, leanportland.com. We also have a happy hour where we just drink beer and talk about random topics, usually around lean and Six Sigma topics, but sometimes we get off track and go down a rabbit hole. But it's a good area to come network with other people in the process improvement world. Three of us also teach at Portland State University and teach modules for their process improvement certificate program. Usually it's like 1 or 2 days a week on a Thursday, Friday, spread out over a couple months period. And so you go through and you learn about a lot of the topics you learned about the last day or two. And then there, at the end of it, there's a real-world application where you go through and apply the concepts to your work, and then you give a little presentation of what you did. And then there's also, I teach for a consulting company that does Lean and Six Sigma courses, and a little bit more broader ones, so black belt training, green belt certification, Lean training. So those are held throughout the U.S., but there's usually a class in Portland every couple of months or so.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, so really it's what's the problem you guys are trying to solve, and how would you go research information to get there? So just a few more online resources. Take a note or go to the slides later for what you're interested in. Lots of great stuff here. We brought some of our favorite books. You're invited to come over and flip through. We're not selling any of these books. But we can help point you to one that you might be interested in if you're trying to like learn more about a problem-solving framework, or you're interested in statistical process control for your product quality or something. Lean Farm is a fun book, so be sure to check that out. I think maybe that's a little closer, for example-wise, to something that you would be interested in. And then mostly I just wanted to open it up to see what questions you guys had, what further discussion or help we might be in the next 10 minutes. So to you guys.
Thanks, you three. Any questions? We have time. Yes.
So we were talking about communication over here, how it's kind of an ongoing issue where it'll get better for a little bit and then just drops back off. And you have a meeting about communication, and it gets better and drops back off. So how would you kind of implement like something where it just gets through that this communication is important, and it is important for everybody, and to kind of keep that going? So that's...
Yeah, I'll share from my experience. It's this is a pretty common thing. I mean, I work in healthcare, we deal with it all the time. The one thing I can say that works is some of the routines. So we do a daily huddle where the point is around communication. People show up and it's just a few minutes, so you have to invest that kind of time, but then people know where to go. It's also done on a whiteboard or at a whiteboard, so if you've got people coming in late, they know where to go. So like my question back to you would be, what kind of structure or routine do you want to establish and then be consistent? Maria and Brian, other thoughts?
And you guys also have an escalation process, right, for issues.
So that's a really good point. Because we are doing this on a daily basis, we're trying to create two-way communication with all of our teams. And so what we've done is, I work in a 2,000-person company, so not everybody can go to that first huddle. But what we do is set up rules around when to talk to the boss, basically. And so you go red if a criteria is met, we're having a delay in patient care. And so set up some rules like that so that you can actually communicate out effectively to everybody on the team up and down in the organization.
How many guys have a daily meeting where you get together with everyone, and, or at least in a department, and have a discussion every day and go through like what happened yesterday, what's the plan today, who's in, who's out today, who's filling in, what's going on, what's the status, what are we trying to get done today? A few people? That's usually the starting point for a lot of our improvements, is getting that set up, just because we know it's such an effective way of not only sharing what's going on and communicating, but bringing up problems. and say, what happened yesterday? And let's talk about it.
Thanks a lot for opening up your space to us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.